Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, welcome to Be a Terrier. Stephen Chicken here, joined by David Hartrick. How are you doing, Dave?
Not too bad at all. How are you, Stephen?
Yes, very good, thank you. Let's see if I can get through the entire hour or so without mentioning that I went to see Patrick Stewart yesterday. We've had two games since we last recorded, a win and a loss. And the win is 3 points. It wasn't a great performance. The loss was a terrible performance, just all around. Yeah, we'll start with the QPR game, 2-0. Blistering start. We're watching that for 15, 20 minutes and going, this is brilliant. You know, they're playing on the front foot. They've scored with their first two shots, deservedly as well. Nothing lucky about it. Two really good moves. Keep this going, town. Get a third goal. Kill these off, because these are rubbish QPR. And then, as Darren Moore put it, it was like they hit the pause button and they seemed to grow incredibly fearful at the prospect of losing this 2-0 lost, this 2-0 lead, which of course almost meant that they did. They were very lucky to see out those 3 points in the end, with QPR failing to capitalise on some set pieces. There were worrying signs there that we pointed out, but ultimately it was 3 points. So at that point we were thinking, right, well, fine, they've got through it.
Yeah, I think it was a tactical thing that, and I don't think it came from Darren Moore either, because he was absolutely livid about it on the touchline, because I spent a lot of time watching the game, and that I think QPR got the instruction that they could turn that defence and get in behind. And I think Town went into their shells and they thought, well, the only thing we can do is just drop really deep to counteract that. And I think you can counteract it in different ways. And unfortunately, when you sit that deep, it then becomes much more difficult to get the ball into the areas that they had in the first 25 minutes that were really hurting QPR, by the way. And they just stopped doing the things that they were doing really well. And it's a confidence/bravery issue, isn't it? It's you go from absolutely flying and coasting. And a couple of those players at 2-0 up for 5 minutes look to be really enjoying themselves. And I thought, you know, Delano Bergsog, there's a man who quite enjoys being 2-0 up in a home game. But then, as I said, I think they just dropped so deep. And do you know what it reminded me of, Stephen? Watching England. Because that is exactly what England did for years and years and years, which was go ahead in games like Brazil at the World Cup and various others, and then gradually, mentally, think they're getting in behind us, so we've just got to drop deeper and deeper and deeper. And before you know it, you've got 10 men in your own half. You've got one man sort of fighting against three defenders as your outball, which is never going to work. And it just becomes what you had on Saturday, which is, I think a better team would have got something out of that game. But at the same time, it's a small credit, but I thought for that first 20-25 minutes, they were really good. Really, really good, you know. And they were doing exactly what you do against QPR, which is you get right on the front foot and you go for them. You use the wide areas really well, which they did. But yeah, I think then it was just a bit of a mental collapse, really, more than anything. And Darren Moore was livid about it on the touchline, and he was trying to force them up, and he kept trying to tell them to get out. But yeah, just a mental thing, as you said, I think.
Yeah, I think some important context for that is that last season they only went 2-0 up in the first half twice, and they ended up drawing both of them 2-2 against West Brom and Blackburn. Because as much as livid, Darren Moore was just befuddled. He was completely bewildered as to why his team had done that. Because you could sense that, you know, Town had got the third goal, QPR would have just that they'd have been done. You know, they'd have known they weren't coming back from that, and Town just went the other way instead. I think obviously Darren Moore is used to having a side towards the top of the division who would go and kill off a team from that position. And he was interested to hear that context for that Town just haven't been at it in that way. I think, weirdly, I think the crowd, as much as the fans, didn't really know to react to going 2-0 up, because there was a period about 20 minutes in where Michal Helić just had the ball and was just looking for a pass on the edge of his own third. And the fans were getting really restless. It's like, geez, lads, you 2-0 up here. and you couldn't hear a pin drop around the stadium. It was very odd. I think sort of people weren't quite used to being in this scenario. But I opted not to be too critical. There were obviously issues against QPR, particularly when it came to defending set pieces, particularly when it came to dropping too deep. But you sort of think, well, is it just this, that they're not used to playing from this kind of winning position? Do we give them the benefit of the doubt because they have ultimately won the game, which is something that Town haven't done too much this season? So it was sort of, we didn't, you know, go mad with our, I didn't go mad with my praise and the conclusions or anything like that. And we highlighted these issues, but it was sort of, well, but they did win.
They have won.
Yeah. And I think it's different to go through a game and have 6 or 7 shots, as they did against Sheffield Wednesday when it's 0-0, and go through a game and have 6 or 7 shots, as they did against QPR, when you've actually scored with your first two. Yeah. I think they're not the same thing.
No.
But in the same way, by the way, that you can have 15 shots and run your XG up and end up winning on expected goals, as it were, only after you've gone 3 or 4-0 down, which is what they did against Birmingham and Cardiff. But, you know, there were sort of, you sort of look at that QPR performance and you think, well, if they stick with the same sort of game plan and just do what they did for 15, 20 minutes, but do it for longer against Cardiff, then they might get something out of that game. And unfortunately, this time the early goal went against them and they absolutely collapsed, but not for the first time this season.
Yeah. I before the game, I weirdly had a feeling they would get something. I really fancied Town, because I thought mentally there would be a shift, and I thought Darren Moore would be able to get them to concentrate on the 20-25 minutes they played well. And yeah, the early goal, it was a bad goal to concede. It was a collective failure, that goal, really, because there was a lack of engagement on the cross. And then, you know, how long do you want to give somebody in the middle to back heel it, strash, side flick it, whatever you want to call it? And then I think the positioning of the defence was wrong in general. But you've got to be a bit more resilient, haven't you? You've got to, you know, it's a home game against Cardiff. It's not, you're not playing Leicester. You haven't gone 1-0 down after 2 minutes against Leicester. It's against Cardiff. You've kind of got to, you know, push your chests out and go, right, okay, pull our socks up. We've got ourselves into this. Let's get ourselves out of it as quickly as we can. But just didn't feel like that at all, did it? It just felt like, I mean, that first half at times, they were just running through them at will, weren't they?
Yeah. The first goal, I said to you before kickoff, I just hope Yuta stays switched on. Yuta Nakihama stays switched on throughout this game, because, and it's not something since his injury, and we've mentioned it before, that he does have a tendency to, he can switch off in games, and he'd done it against QPR for the header that Jimmy Dunn missed. It let him go free. So with that in mind, I said, I just hope Yuta switches on. And within 90 seconds, he's way too casual to let Bowler get onto that flick on around the corner. And then, as you say, they failed to stop the cross. Him and Headley, both of them, to be fair, but mostly Nakayama, was so casual trying to stop that cross. There was no determination. It was just sort of limply following back and then trail a foot out and go, and hope for the best. It was rubbish.
Yeah.
But, as you say, no resilience whatsoever after they concede that goal.
No.
You know, you switch off and concede early, fine. It's happened before. We've seen it. But there is a repeated pattern for Huddersfield Town this season where, if you do, as you say, if you concede an early goal, you don't then have to concede another three.
Yeah.
And it's happened, weirdly, every time this season Town have conceded that early goal, they've gone on and been terrible and got battered. They did it against Plymouth on the opening day where, okay, most of the run of play, Town were the team on top, but they committed such stupid mistakes in that game that you wouldn't normally see out of them, and got soundly beaten as a result. Against Norwich, they concede after 11 minutes, and then again just collapse. They concede the next one 6 minutes later, and again they'd been on top in that game for the first 10 minutes, and then they concede, and then the whole thing just completely folds, which was Neil Warnock's comment after the game, you know, that they've been great for 10 minutes, concede, and then completely collapse. Birmingham, 3 minutes in, Lee Nichols lets in a shot that he should save from distance, and then Town are absolutely hopeless for the rest of the evening, absolutely pathetic performance, and they lose 4-1. And here it was the same thing. They concede after 2 minutes, I think this is the worst of the four. You and I were debating whether this or Norwich was worse.
I don't know. I think that Norwich game, I think they're very similar, actually, Steve, saying that. I think we're looking at two performances where Town have offered, like, next to nothing, really, when it actually matters. Because we will talk a little bit about the second half, and some of the stats are slightly disingenuous. You know, I saw only West Brom created more big chances than Town on the match day, etc. But, yeah, you know, it's
Cardiff
easy when...
Cardiff are 4-0 up.
They're 4-0 up, yeah. So, yeah. And it's also a worry that, you know, Cardiff might have been 4-0 up and switched on, but Town created those chances and still didn't score so much as a consolation goal. So, but I think Norwich and Cardiff are on a par for me. You know, they're on a par. But, I mean, what a horrible conversation to be having.
Yeah, what's the worst of their dreadful performances? But this is the thing, is like, they've had those heavy defeats, but weirdly, the games where they haven't conceded early, they've been fine. Not necessarily good, but the only other game that they've lost where they've not conceded early is Leicester. So it's not just that they are conceding early and then getting battered, but it's also they are only getting battered and only really losing games, other than against the team that's running away with the title. They are only losing the games where they're conceding early. So it puts me in a weird position where it's like, how bad is this team? Or is it just this one glass jaw where you can put them on the ropes by getting an early strike? Somewhere in between, I suspect.
I kind of think that they didn't play well, but they got their win on Saturday, and it's quite a big thing to sort of get off your back as a new manager, is to get that first home win, and then they've collapsed on Tuesday. There's no getting around there. There's a few things I want to say performance wise, but what I find kind of interesting with Town managers when they come in is most of them seem to have this performance, this sort of level of collapse where you need a sort of team meeting where someone's going round and delivering a few home truths. You know, Warnock, we had it after with the Coventry game, which Warnock was very bullish about later on in saying that he felt they should have won that. But Town were awful on the day, absolutely awful, and got hammered. And they were struggling at that point. Cowley, we had it with, what was it, the Blackburn game where it was it 5-2 off the top of my head, something like that, and they were just universally awful not long after he'd come in. Fotheringham had one. It's almost like they need to, every time Town get a new manager, they need to have a couple of weeks where they're up and down, then a really bad performance, and then we can actually start to learn something about what's going to happen going forward. And it's a really frustrating habit to have, because like you say, at the moment, very difficult team to analyse, really, because they are doing some things better and some things well. You know, I would argue they're creating more chances and better chances. They're still not taking them. Well, why? Well, we know a big part of that is because they need a striker. That was their problem in the summer. That's still their problem now. You know, we had, what was it at the start? It was Harrit and who else was up top? Harrit and Bergsorg, and then we had Harrit and Huddlin. And, you know, I'm not sure all three are really championship strikers at the moment that you would hang your hat on to any degree. So again, you're like, okay, well, they are creating more, but they've still got the problem we know about. I felt they looked better when they switched to a four.
Yeah.
But that's because they finally had a right back they could put in there, in Tom Edwards, but they were 3-0 down at half time. and they conceded another one. So it's like, do you take anything from that? Do you think you've learned anything from that? It's just very, I just don't know. There's just a hell of a lot of unknowns at the moment with this town side. The one thing I do know is that all the things we said in the summer, I think, are still exactly true now. And they've got to address that in the January transfer window. I think, unfortunately, neither of us are particularly transfer people. You know, you can fix things with new players every transfer window, as some people are. But this time, I do think they have got to bring some people in. So Darren Moore's job is effectively take as many points as you can till we get to January. Then we can do some work on the squad, and then it becomes a different challenge after that.
Yeah, and I think we've been saying that since September, really, because I think the club acknowledged that they didn't get the work done in the transfer window that they wanted to. We've talked about before about the reasons why that might have been, so we won't get into that again. But I think they would hope that things would be, that they might find themselves in a different landscape in January. I'm sure they're already working towards that end, try to get people in for January. I sort of think there is a sense, I think particularly when it comes to judging the job that Darren Moore is doing, I think there is an understanding within the club that he's been handed quite a difficult hand in terms of inheriting a squad that does need those signings. But it doesn't get him totally off the hook, obviously. You know, I think I think unless things really do continue to be like they were against Cardiff and Birmingham, because you say every manager has one of these games before they crack on, but Darren Moore has now had two. And let's not forget the Wednesday and QPR games in between. The Wednesday game was dreadful for both sides against the worst team in the division. And the QPR game, even though they won, was not convincing. So, but he's also had in there that brilliant performance in a draw against Ipswich. So as it sits here right now, I'm minded to agree with you entirely and just say, look, he just needs to get through to January. And I think as long as the results are at or around, I always say, I've been saying all season 4 points every three games, because that is enough to get you to 60 points over a season. But I think the shape of the squad now is such that I would probably say somewhere between 3 and 4 points every three games would be okay, which he's not far off. They're not far off that under Darren Moore, to be fair. You know, that they're on a point per game under him, admittedly having played two of that bottom three, and Coventry, who are 20th at the moment. I think there are things that he needs to sort out. I think the players don't. I sort of agree with Matt Glennon, maybe not quite as vociferously, but do agree that the forwards are pushing very far forward as if they were expecting long balls. But he's also seems to be instructing the defenders to be try and build play from the back, and that sort of leads the midfield stuck in two minds. Which, to be fair, is a criticism that was pointed out to me after I'd written the conclusion. Someone pointed that out to me on Wednesday, and I've gone back and looked at the footage, and it's like, oh yeah, they were right. And it's Darren Moore's job to sort that out. However, I know from having spoken to him, that isn't an instruction. He's not saying, You lads go forward and you lads try and build it out. He does have a more cohesive idea in mind. But at the moment, as it stands, he's not been able to get that into his players yet. And we said before the international break, we were a bit sceptical about how much of an impact he could have over that 2 weeks. And I think we're seeing that. But they need over time to find how they're going to play. And I think he is learning as much as anyone how he's going to go about it. Unfortunately, this weekend's game is take the emotion out of it, which I know is easier said than done, but it's not a game you'd expect Town to get anything out of on paper going away to a team. I know they've just lost on Wednesday, but they rested three of their best players as well, who are going to be back on Saturday. It's not a game you'd expect Town to get anything out of. And then if we're talking about points tallies, having lost to Cardiff means, well, they need to win at least one of the they need 4 points really against Watford and Hull, so they need to, which feels like a bit of a tall order at the moment, unfortunately, despite Watford being rubbish and Hull having had their excellent home form broken recently.
Yeah, it's a tough assignment at the minute. I think there's a couple of factors. I think one thing you have to remember, a lot of these players have had Danny Schofield, Mark Fotheringham, Neil Warnock, Neil Warnock again, and now Darren Moore in two seasons. And that's a lot of different ideas. That's a lot of cognitive load. And I think at the moment, there's a lot of players in there who I think are in, I wouldn't even call them bad habits, but they're adjusting habits that have been trained into them by other people. I think the other factor is the bloke who came before, because the one thing that Neil Warnock thrives on is the power of ideas. You know, it's I don't necessarily buy into it or particularly agree with it, but it's that thing I kind of joke about, but you know, you need to dive 6 foot headlong into a header to win a corner, you know, and all of that. I kind of want to see a bit more football than that. And I think they've kind of got to break the shackles a bit, because I think the forwards were pushed high because that's where they've been training for months, you know, that's what they're kind of inclined to do. I think at the moment the defence is feeling under pressure, and as I said, they mentally, I think they dropped way too deep, and if you drop too deep, all you can really do is hit the ball long, because all you can see in front of you is a sea of bodies, and unfortunately panic sets in. I think there's lots of factors. I think the other factor is they need to be brutally honest with you, they need to be a little bit fitter. I thought on Tuesday, I wasn't the only one, I thought there were a few people that looked, there were a couple of players that didn't look as sharp. When I say fitter, that doesn't mean running around for 90 minutes. It's kind of mentally sharp, you know, match sharp, match tune. And yeah, they've just kind of got to get going. And the next three games are kind of the last three games you'd want after losing 4-0 at home to Cardiff, aren't they? That's the problem. And I do, you know, like, you're not on social media much. I'm not on social media that much, but I do go on a bit. And I do like to kind of take the temperature of the fans. And I think after Saturday, there was a lot of people were quite, not sort of happy with Moore, but were absolutely fine. Mm. It's only taken 90 minutes for that to kind of turn. And there was a lot of people saying a lot of things that I just, to be honest, I just don't agree with. Because I think anyone you bought in would have the same issues. And I think if you bought Neil Warnock back, I think then you've potentially got issues going forward. And I'll leave it at that. But yeah, it's difficult. It's a really difficult moment, I think, for the club at the minute. I think if you could press fast forward and just get to January the 1st, making sure you got your Christmas presents on the way, I think, you know, that's what everybody would want to do, but it doesn't work like that. And there is a world where they don't get any points from those three games. And if they do, if that does happen, Rotherham are sort of right on their heels. They could find themselves in the bottom three. And there's no escaping the fact that it then becomes Groundhog Day and it becomes the same season we saw last year.
Yeah, and the year before that.
Yeah. And
so three of the last 4 years, yeah.
And that the difference is this time, though, is that they've got a new ownership team, you know, lots of new faces at the club. And it's not just... the atmosphere can become toxic far quicker, and they've got to try and avoid that. I think that is the thing. But I do maintain there are some things you can point to that are positive. You know, you look at Jack Radoni's form and the way he's playing at the moment. Look at some of the younger players that are getting minutes, and they are showing, you know, Headley's got a long way to go, but he's also showing a lot of promise. You know, there are moments where you can see what people see in him. Diarra, I think, should have been on sooner, to be honest with you, on Saturday. And I think he helped enormously when he came on with relieving the pressure. I think, you know, I'm not as high on Kean Harrott as some, but I think you can start to see his game changing. He's starting to get a bit more game intelligence and starting to make slightly better runs and get in better positions. So there are things that are happening, but it's just all too slow at the minute. It's all too slow, and it's quite difficult doing this podcast when I think we both feel like we're sort of saying things we've said before, aren't we?
Well, this is why, and again, it's not that I'm taking a strong I will never criticise Darren Moore policy. My issue at the moment is I don't think I've seen any issues from this Huddersfield Town side in his 6 games in charge that we didn't also see under Neil Warnock in the first 7 games of the season. Because I know he signed off with 2 wins and a draw, but that performance against Stoke, I thought we both thought they were dreadful at the back defensively, and they've continued to be dreadful at the back defensively. They lost 4-0 at home to Norwich under Warnock. Again, I'm not... And you know, we've seen again, they were brilliant against Leicester under Warnock, just as they were brilliant against Ipswich under Darren Moore, but then followed those games up by playing absolute rubbish, you know,
yeah.
Whether immediately or shortly thereafter. So I don't think, as I say, I don't think I've seen any of the issues, and that comes down once again, not to sound like a broken record, but they need more players. And I think there is an acknowledgement at the club that they need more players. As I say, they were saying after deadline day that they knew they needed more players. Kevin Nagel, when we spoke to him over the international break, said, "We know that we have needs." They've acknowledged that they didn't get that striker, and they've said that budget is still available. I think they do have a bit of this ownership, though, do have a bit of put your money where your mouth is, don't they? Because
yes, I agree.
Kevin Nagel has put himself out on Twitter and said he's willing to be like a Tom Wamsgans punishment sponge, you know, direct all of your ire at me, the sin cake eater, Kevin Nagel. But, and I'm sure he has got some of that stick that he was asking for, but that stick is only going to go away if they do come out in January. And I'm not saying spend 15 million quid.
No.
But they need that transfer window they had a few years ago where they went and gone, right, we need a left back, let's get the best left back in League One and sign Harry Toffolo. Or we need an attacking midfielder, let's go and get young Emil Smith Rowe on loan from Arsenal. They need that kind of transfer window, and get those players in quickly as well, because they've got really 2 weeks. If you say, well, we don't care about the FA Cup, because let's be honest, who does other than a small handful of people? They've got 2 weeks grace there to get those players in January. And we were just talking off air before we started, and we need to see them hitting the ground running and making those deals early. But there's a lot of games to be played before then. They've got 12 games before they get there, you know, another quarter of the season will have gone before they get there. So for all I'm saying, I'm not attaching much blame to Darren Moore. We also can't give him a huge amount of a grace period if we don't see an improvement in the results, because a quarter of a season is a lot of a season.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And, like, I still think, you know, like, a striker makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
A fit Danny Ward makes a big difference. A passing midfielder who's different to the options they've got at the moment and can just see a different kind of pass, because you look at the runs that that Jack Radoni is making at the moment, and you think if he had a Carroll Eiting and Aaron Moy picking him out as well, that would make a huge difference. And I still think there's a question mark over the right back. I think Tom Edwards, we've just not really seen enough of him because of the injury, etc. And, you know, he came on at half time, he got absolutely skinned once, but I thought he did okay after that. And I thought being skinned once for a player who's been out for a few weeks with injuries is fine, you know, as a return, that's fine, don't worry. But I think there's a question of, you know, like, we need Ollie Turton to come back and be absolutely as good as he was before he went off, and the kind of injuries he had, as we've seen with Yuta Nakayama, there's no guarantee of that. So there's a question mark there. But I, these problems are solvable. That's my that's my silver lining at the moment. Name of an excellent book, Steve. You might want to have a look it up on Amazon. Bobby Robson's Time in Charge of the England Team. It's an excellent read. But my silver lining is these problems are quite fixable. Okay, and I think being fixable, it does slightly put the pressure on them to go and fix them, doesn't it? That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
They have to, when things are as obvious as they are, then if you don't go and sort it, you need answers as to why not, don't you?
Yeah, I think they need to seriously look at whether that 3-5-2 is the best way for them to go.
It's too easy to get in behind. It's too easy.
Yeah,
I think a 4. Is. They need a 4.
I think Yuta, I wouldn't be playing him at centre back. I think, again, you say since his injury, but I think he did this before his injury. I think he switches off too much to play as a centre back. And it's interesting, even on Tuesday, when he had I had him on 2 out of 10 at half time. And he ended up earning himself a 3, because I thought actually after the break when he was playing as an out-and-out left-back, he was fine. Didn't have an issue with it. I don't think he was brilliant, but he was fine. He got forward, he put some good crosses in. So I would like to see him as a left-back, and I think you can play him and Edwards in a 4. I think the problem is, if you take Nakayama out, who do you put in? I think Ruffles, if he's fit again, you can play the 3. And in fact, the record when they've had Pearson, Hellick and Ruffles has actually been quite good defensively this season. It's been easily the most convincing defensive backline they've had. But in the absence of Josh Ruffles, I think Lees has been good since he's come back. But I think Pearson, Hellick, Lees, not blessed with pace. You're not solving the getting in behind issue particularly there, are you?
No. I think that's the problem. They need a 4, and it's most definitely a 4 without Matty Pearson at right back. That's an absolute given, and it's also about making it difficult for other sides as well, because I think it's quite easy to set up against that 3-5-2 of Towns at this point, because you kind of know what each player is going to do in that role. So again, it's a difficult problem to solve immediately, but unfortunately they do kind of have to find a way to solve it immediately, yeah, don't they?
Because they did start the season playing a 4, yeah, and that wasn't working, so they moved away from it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we'll see. I'm exactly where you are in that I haven't learned anything yet. I don't think I didn't already know.
I think the benefit you'd get from playing a 4 is, I think a 3 at the back, a 3-5-2 is traditionally, and things have changed a bit in 30 years, but is traditionally a counter-attacking strategy. I think if Town's big issue is they are getting the ball in defence and looking for those passes and not finding anyone, we'll take a defender out there then. And I know it's not straightforward, because obviously, you know, if you're playing a 3, then you're expecting your 2 either side to go out wide and your wing-backs to push forward. So, but I just think that you might be able to find some different angles there. You know, I mentioned that it didn't work at the start of the season under Neil Warnock, but we've not seen Darren Moore start a back 4 yet. He's been a 3-5-2 every game, other than having the slight variation of a 3-4-1-2 against Sheffield Wednesday. So I just think with his different approach, the fact that he does want them to have more of the ball than Neil Warnock did, because pretty much every manager does, that it's maybe worth looking at again. Unfortunately, again, this Saturday's game is a difficult one to make a change in and try something completely new and hope to get any lessons out of it. Because they're playing Leeds United away from home, which is a very tough game, and it's a very big ask. For it's almost, if you try it in that game and it doesn't work, it have you sort of soured the milk before you've even, you know?
Yeah, I just think we're not in a position to sort of, we're talking about these problems, we're not in a position to ask for patience or anything like that, and we wouldn't anyway, we're analysts, but it's kind of where we are. I think we've all just got to be patient at the moment, because as you've eloquently described, whatever you do, there's an issue, you know? However you do it, there is a problem to solve. And yeah, I think that Darren Moore, I think when he's done his presses and when he's done his interviews, he spoke very well and he spoke very realistically. And I don't think you're going to get a sort of Mark Fotheringham type press conference where you come away thinking a little bit, not sure about that. I think he knows where the issues are. I think he's realistic about what he can and what he can't solve. I think he's positive about the right things, and I think he's questioning about the right things. But there is no denying that the next 3 games are, each in their own way, are massive. But at the same time, I think if they manage to win one, and potentially win one well, then we all suddenly feel a lot better. I think at the moment we are all on the Huddersfield Town roller coaster again, where every game they lose we feel miserable and everything's rubbish and they've got to sort everything out. Every time they win, they're going to be all right, they'll get through to January, they'll stay up, no issue. It does feel like we're exactly back on that particular roller coaster that we all love, Steve.
yeah, absolutely adore it. Yeah, I don't know. I have already seen some criticism of Darren Moore that I think is a bit premature, maybe not unfair, but is pitched in such a way that I think it's that I think it is a bit premature, if that makes sense. Like what the actual criticism might be accurate, but saying it so strongly and yeah, is maybe a bit harsh, I think, on him. But hey, there you go. We always say fans don't sign up to be reasonable, do they? Yeah,
no.
Always. And they have no obligation to be.
No, they don't. They don't. And we've said it before, we can remove the emotion a little bit as invested neutrals, and we try to stay analytical. It's that classic thing. I do understand where people are coming from, but we are trying to take more of a helicopter view, because otherwise this podcast is kind of not analysis anymore, it's reaction. And I think Andy Takes That Chance is a very, very good podcast, and they give you the perfect fan reaction, really, because they come at it from different angles and they do that job. Our job is slightly different. It's not you know, we're not defending anyone here, we're just trying to call it as we see it. And what we're calling at the moment is that it's very difficult to see it, but it's not all doom and gloom. But we also acknowledge there's a to-do list for Darren Moore that he has to start working his way through quickly. And I don't mind if the results aren't there for a couple of weeks, but we see some progress, as in, you know, we find a defence that works and starts defending set pieces properly again, as an example. Yeah. Or we see a midfield that connects and actually starts to generate a bit of cover for the back and support for whoever's up top. Or we see an attack that starts to fire a little bit. But that's what we need to see, really, because I don't think it's realistic to sit here and say, OK, everything needs to improve immediately, because football just doesn't work like that.
Yeah, and I think leading into that, I'm playing down Town's chances against Leeds, but I think there is, it's hard for me to say this, because I know it's such emotion involved in the local derby, and people have to go into work on a Monday morning and see their Leeds supporting mates and all of this. But I think there is a way for them to lose that game with their heads held high, as opposed to losing 3-0,
I couldn't agree more with that. Yeah. If you go and you take a few on the chin for once instead of collapsing, then you come away and you feel a hell of a lot better. But what they can't afford to do is concede in the first 10 minutes and then concede another 3.
Yeah, yeah. And there's serious questions to be asked if that does happen. And you'd hope they would be able to stand up to it a bit better. And who knows, they might even get a result. I think if they get a point at Elland Road, Town fans would snatch your hand off for that now. And you know, if they manage to score first, then who knows. But yeah, I'm not expecting a particularly fun lunchtime. You can watch it on iFollow, by the way. I was slightly surprised to learn today. If you've not got a ticket, £10 on iFollow via the Town website.
But as I said, there have been some things that have been all right. Let's not completely lose sight of that, and let's hope. Let's be positive. And say Leeds 0, Town 3 Saturday.
Yeah, I'm not saying these players completely sort out their season, but I do think it makes a difference when you get David Kasumu, Josh Ruffles, and Danny Ward back.
Oh,
who I think are all close.
For me, it's Danny Ward. Because at the moment, the problem is the ball's going up front and it's not sticking. And they are creating chances. You know, Jack Redoni missed 3 very presentable chances, let's be honest, in that Cardiff game. And you can add context as to when they came and all of that sort of thing. But, you know, Wardy, if nothing else, he brings others into play in a way that Harrit, Hudlin, Bergsog, they just don't do that. And you're exactly right. I think Kasumu suddenly makes the bench and the squad feel stronger.
Yeah,
and
that's
you
it.
Know,
yeah.
He can deputise in that right back, and he looked good. He gives you another option. Ruffles was playing very, very well.
He was.
So again, it gives you that option. But for me, it's Danny Ward, because I just don't think. I think the drop off from Danny Ward to their next best striker at the moment is just too big. Just too big. So we shall see. We shall see. But we just don't want to do the same podcast for 12 weeks, do we?
No. There's 2 players I want to talk about before we do finish, Dave.
Yep.
For different reasons. You made a list of players who I think there's positives out of. I would add Sorber Thomas to that list.
Yeah.
Because I think if you take out the 2 games where he's played in the central positions, Birmingham and Sheffield Wednesday, he's been in pretty good form recently, actually. You know, he's had, if you count his the own goal assist, he's had 5 assists this season. Him and Jack Redoni against Cardiff. And I was really glad to see the fans agree with me on this, because I think I'm always interested to look at what the fans have given, and there's always certain players who don't get quite what I thought they deserved, and a couple of players who always get a little bit more than I think they deserved. And Sauber is one of those players who always, I think, gets a bit less than I had him on. And the fans had him rated best of anyone against Cardiff, which I thought was correct. Him and Jack Radoni, I thought, were the two who actually came out of that game with any credit whatsoever. Yeah. I thought he was good against QPR. I thought he was good against Ipswich. I thought he was good against Coventry. He seems to be, out of anyone, enjoying life under Darren Moore. And you mentioned Danny Ward there, and we've had our criticisms of Danny Ward. There's been times where we've defended Danny Ward. I'm interested to see Danny Ward playing with Sauber Thomas in this form.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. And I think the thing about Ward is that I know the criticism straight away is that he doesn't score enough goals, and that's a town problem, that he doesn't score enough goals. But you've got to look at all the other work he does, and I just don't think there's an adequate replacement there. So when you get Josh Caroma, who I thought looked brighter when he came on, and again, we can add all the context about what the score was, but look brighter. If you get Danny Ward doing what Danny Ward does up front, and you keep Sauber in this sort of form, then there are teams they're going to hurt. You know, there are teams, and I still think Town are probably going to beat most of the teams we expect them to, lose to most of the teams we expect them to, and kind of pick up enough points in between to be all right. But they do, there is no doubt, and they kind of need that triumvirate to start firing fairly quickly.
I think more than anything, Danny Ward, even if he's not scoring, he's the only player in that squad at the moment who can play as a lone striker. So yeah. We were talking about the different shapes that you can use, but I think he's almost locked into either 3-5-2 or maybe what he did second half the other night, which is 4-4-2, simply because he kind of, with what he's got available, he has to play a front two at the moment, Darren Moore, until Ward's back, at which point suddenly you can play a three again, because you know that Danny Ward is going to do all that stuff off the ball and do the job of two strikers off the ball, basically.
Yeah. I think that the other kind of frustrating thing is that Town, we've talked about this before, but Town either have Josh Caroma in form, Danny Ward in form, or Sauber Thomas in form. And it's about time we had a couple of these players together working in form, you know, and hurting teams, because that's what they need to do. And this is why we're not kind of, I think we're both not kind of at the point where, I saw a lot of people saying, oh, I'm immediately going to lump on Town to get relegated and all of this sort of stuff. And it's like, I just think that's a pretty wild reaction to that one game, really. If it becomes a pattern, then it will probably be our reaction to say they're in deep trouble here. But there are these things that make you question how difficult a job it is at the moment, because it is really, really difficult. Really, really difficult. And you kind of go, well, who else could come in and improve from what Moore's doing? And I think the problem is the default answer a lot of fans have got is, well, Neil Warnock would. And I don't think that's the case. I really don't think that's the case on a few different levels. But yeah. But no, you're exactly right to point out that, to be honest with you.
The other player I wanted to talk about quickly was Ben Wiles, who I know is coming for a lot of criticism. I know Matt Glennon particularly mentioned him after the QPR game. I don't think Ben Wiles has been good the past couple of games. He was left out against Sheffield Wednesday. We mentioned that tactical switch where he played Sauber at 10. It was Ben Wiles that was left out there. Neil Warnock did allude a couple of times to Ben Wiles playing through not being 100% fit. We know he was out pretty much all of the second half of last season with quite a serious injury. He's also moved club for the first time in his career, having been at Rotherham's youth system and come all the way through to the first team. I'm not saying he's been good, but I can understand the impatience when the results are as they are, but are people being a bit prematurely critical of Ben Wiles, do you think?
Yeah, I do. And the thing is, I've been critical of him off the podcast. I was, you know, before the game, I was chatting to somebody in the press room and I was sat next to you. And I at the moment, my problem is I don't know what he does well. I can see lots of things he's trying to get involved in, but I can't tell you that Ben Wiles really affects a game when he sits deeper and quarterbacks a bit, or he really affects a game when he pushes on and plays as that sort of proto 10 role, or he's really good when he drifts out to the left and he's helping out on that side, because at the moment he feels kind of a little bit ill-defined, and I'm not sure exactly what his role is. But I do think you have to like you've just said something there which I completely agree with, which is he's moved clubs for the first time in his life, and these, you know, footballers are humans. He's been so used to and so ingrained in doing things a certain way, and Rotherham don't burn through managers, you know, every 6 months. So their kind of style and their playing way is kind of set in, if not stone, in semi-stone, semi-permanent stone. So
semi-stone.
Yeah. So it's a big change and it's a big difference. And he's clearly talented. You know, he's clearly a very talented footballer. And there is a little bit of a riddle to solve there. But I just think it's a case of trying to find out where you get the absolute best from him. And as somebody pointed out to me, if his job is to kind of just platform Jack Redoni and let him play like he is at the minute, then there is an argument to be made that that's absolutely fine, by the way, because Jack Redoni is by far Town's best player by a mile at the minute, by an absolute mile. You know, you can't even make the Lee Nichols argument at the minute because of the way Nichols has started this season. So there is that side, but I kind of feel for Ben Wiles at the moment because he's drifting out of games, and when a midfielder drifts out of games, it's a very obvious thing and it's a very easy kind of stick to beat them with. But I don't think he's drifting out of games for any other reason other than they kind of don't know how to use him to get the best from him, where you get the best kind of effect from him. For me, I think he needs to play higher. I think he needs to, if I'm honest, from what I've seen of him and what I know of him from when he was at Rotherham and various other things, I think he's far better. He's not a defensive midfielder. You know, he doesn't sit. But yeah, it's another reason I think the 3-5-2, I think they probably need to have a look at it, because I think there's a few players like Wiles at the moment that system's just not getting anything from, Steve, really.
I think there's two things here. I think, one, Darren Moore has not generally preferred to play a number 10, and then weirdly when he did do it, he put Sorba Thomas in there, which, you know, I played devil's advocate on, but he's not. Neil Warnock was very definitely playing Ben Wiles as number 10, and Darren Moore has basically not played a number 10 at all. And I think there's two issues. One, as you say, I think Wiles is less good dropping back a bit. I think, two, we know that at Rotherham they were just going over the midfield all the time, so I think he's not used to particularly the positioning in that deeper lying role, that box-to-box role, is not natural to him, because I think he's used to just push forward like you would from a 10 and just get into the final line and look to be the one who's getting onto a flick on. But I think also, as you've highlighted, Jack Redoni is in incredible form at the moment. I think if you were to say on paper what is Ben Wiles there for, you would say, well, he should be doing the same things that Jack Redoni is doing. But if Jack Redoni's there doing them, you don't need another one. It's Lampard Gerrard all over again, in a minor way. But I think that the obvious solution is, as I say, we'll play Wiles at a 10, but then you're asking Redoni to play a deeper role and you're removing some of the things from his game that he has been doing well recently. So it is a tough one to solve, particularly because Jonathan Hogg, again, has been generally excellent this season.
He has, but I think with Hoggy, I think the problem is you kind of exactly know what Hoggy's going to do, right? Mm-hmm. Which he does really, really well. You know, he does really, really well. But he is at a point of his career where I'm not going to say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but at the same time, it's like, if you know exactly what Hogg's going to do, we now know exactly what Jack Redoni wants to do. It's kind of a case, okay, how does the third midfielder sit with this? What is the list of five things we want that midfielder to do? And how many of those things does Ben Wiles actually tick off? And I just wonder if he's not quite right for that system, but there is a system that suddenly gets a lot more from him. I do keep wondering about a 4-2-3-1, Steve. I do, because although it means leaving out a couple of players that we've talked about who are playing well, but I was looking at the bench it might give you as well, and it does kind of potentially give you some genuine options off the bench as well. Because one of the things I think with the 3-5-2 is it's quite difficult to change in game, you know, and just move players about to just change the shape if it's not working.
Because you've got three centre-backs on the pitch, yeah.
Exactly. And I do wonder if a 4-2-3-1, where it's easier to change into a 3-5-2, if that's what you think you want to do in-game, or to adjust to a 4-3-3, or to adjust to something else. I do kind of wonder if that might be worth looking at. The other thing about a 4-2-3-1 is I sometimes think in the short term, a 4-2-3-1 is quite a good system for when you just want to shore things up, because we know how Town will play it, which is immediately Hogg will come in, split the centre-backs, you've got a five. It makes you difficult to break down, and it means you can't just get inside and just turn them that easily. So I do wonder if it might be a little short-term fix as you try to work out what to do with people going forward. But
yeah, the big criticism for I think the big criticism classically of the 4-2-3-1 is it's quite boring and quite stodgy and very sort of Mourinho and Benitez. But I think kind of that's what, as you say, kind of what Town need at the moment. But again, I think you can't really do it without Danny Ward. So I don't know. As you say, this isn't our job, but I think Wiles does have something to offer. Do you know where I've seen, even in these last couple of games, QPR and Cardiff, where I don't think he's played well, Wiles has had his moments going when he's drifted out wide, when he's got the ball in advanced areas on the right-hand side, and he's been able to play those little 1-2s with Sorba Thomas. They have actually got some good moves going through that.
Do you know, if I were being absolutely wild, right, if I was absolutely rolling the dice and the pressure was off and you do what you wanted, I think with Danny Ward out, right now, genuinely, I might be quite tempted to try a 4-2-3-1 with Wiles as your sort of 10, but perhaps slightly deeper than a normal 10, and push Jack Redoni up top, weirdly, because I don't think there's anybody else who goes anywhere near doing what Wardy does, and that's the where the squad is stretched. But
wow,
that would be wild. That would be out there.
Yeah, that really is out there, mate.
Well, Cardiff played without a striker. They had four wingers on the pitch, didn't they?
But yeah, I mean, and set pieces, obviously. We will mention again, because bloody hell, last two games they've been all... I don't know what's happened.
Two goals and not a player has jumped in the box. That's unacceptable. And that's poor.
QPR should have scored more. Cardiff probably should have scored more.
Yeah,
horrendous. I don't know what's happened there. But
I do wonder if that's like symptomatic of a change of coach. You know, if you've... The one thing we know Warnock was good at was he had a lot of stuff around set pieces, both defending and attacking. And you just wonder if new coaching team has come in, new ideas, there needs to be a little bit of time to sort of bed in. Because, I mean, against QPR, I was nearly texting in first half and said, if QPR get another free kick or another corner here, it's basically as good as a goal. Which is that's a really poor position to be in.
Yeah, they do have Simon Ireland in as a specific set piece coach now.
Maybe it's a change of style. Maybe it's a change of approach, and they just genuinely need time on the pitch for it to happen going forward. That could well be it.
But who knows? But it needs to stop anyway. Right, and as you say, I think anything tactical or anything to do with marking doesn't really explain why players aren't challenging for the ball properly, but there you go.
Yeah.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Right, Dave, what is your media recommendation?
I'm slightly embarrassed to recommend this, but it is how I've spent most of my time, as Steve knows, which is I've just been playing Mega Drive Sonic the Hedgehog. If you have a PlayStation, in store, the Mega Drive collection is, I think, £4 at the moment, and it gives you 50-odd games, including Streets of Rage 2, which is just as good as you remember, Shinobi, eSWAT. There's some Golden Axe, there's some great games in there, but I've just been playing Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, but Sonic 1 mostly, and let me tell you, I'm brilliant at it.
Are you really? It's also free. If you've got a Switch, by the way, you can get the...
Yes. Which I do have a Switch, but I have been playing it on the PlayStation.
I've recently discovered 100 Gex, the band 100 Gex, which are all over the shop, but in all in good ways. So the album 10,000 Gex is mine. People will be, I'm way behind on this. This album came out in March. And
how do you spell Gex?
G-E-C-S.
G-E-C-S. Right. Yeah. I will try them.
Brace yourself. That's me. Right, that's us. Dave, thanks for joining us. We've been talking for nearly 2 hours now, Dave, because we did about 45 minutes before we put the mics on.
Yeah, but that was just pure gossip. That was just too hot to air gossip.
Not about Huddersfield Town. We're talking about all of our friends and family.
As always.
Great stuff. Cheers, Dave.
See you later.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.